Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to week number 6. As we complete the 5 books of the Torah this evening, we have a very special treat. As you are familiar, Rabbi Emanuel Feldman will be teaching the book of Devarim. Just one brief word of introduction is when I started putting our list of instructors together over the course of the summer, the very first phone call that I made was to Eretz Yisrael, to the home of Rabbi Feldman, to arrange a week that he would be able to teach this course. It was difficult working out 6 months in advance exactly which week the Feldmans would be here, but we did figure out a week. We made one slight adjustment, and we're very excited to be able to have Rabbi Feldman teaching this this particular course. For those of you who have been following the Israel trip reports, I now have gathered 2 separate itineraries from other cities that have done the trip. We're going to try to put it all together very shortly. I know that we're moving forward. It's almost December, and we want to have everything arranged in as advanced as possible. So stay tuned. We will be working on that shortly. Without any further ado, Reb Emanuel Feldman.
Thank you. I'm wired. I have to be careful what I say. Can you hear me all right back there? Hear me all right? Good. Fine. Very good. I'm really happy that our trip to America this time worked out so that I could be part of this really tremendous series. I mean, I was amazed when I learned that there are about 150 people had originally signed up for this course, whereby you will have a terrific overview of what the Tanakh is all about. Torah, the 5 books, Nevi'im, the prophets, Ksuvim, the writings, all within the course of a year. It's a tremendous thing. And the value of this type of a program, as I think many of you have already expressed, is that unlike the careful, detailed analysis of certain sections that you get, let's say, on a Shabbos sermon or in a class, unlike that, you get through this type of a course a complete overview, a sort of a macro view of what the Bible, as the non-Jews call it, is all about, is what the Tanakh is all about. So it's very, very important, very valuable, and it's also important to come regularly, try not to miss any classes, although unfortunately I will have to miss a few classes going back to Israel shortly, please God. Okay, so tonight we're going to be looking at the 5th of the 5 books of Moses, Sefer Devarim. Now, Devarim normally, quote, completes the Torah. People think, well, we're now going into the book of Deuteronomy, Devarim, it's usually July, August, in the calendar year of the weekly portions, and we're going to complete the Torah on Simchas Torah, and then we're going to start again with Genesis, with Bereishis. But that's not accurate, because the Torah is not completed. The Torah never has a completion. Torah is never ending. As a matter of fact, if you keep your wits about you on Simchas Torah, which is hard to do, but if you keep your wits about you, you know that as soon as the congregation completes the reading of Devarim, and the death of Moshe comes about, and the tribute to Moshe, which we'll see in a few minutes, is recited by the Torah reader. Scarcely a moment later, what happens? We start Bereishis, right? We start Bereishis. It's a never-ending circle. You know, you don't complete the Torah. There's no end to the Torah. There's always a beginning. As a matter of fact, when you attend a rare occasion of a Siyum HaShas, of someone who completes the entire Talmud, then after they complete the last book of the Talmud, which has 63 volumes, 63 volumes in the Talmud. It's, for those who study a page of Talmud every day, the tens of thousands of Jews who do this around the world, they'll be Siyum Mashas, they'll be completing the Talmud this cycle. I think at the end of this year, around August or September, there'll be the next Siyum Hashas, completion of the Shas. When they complete it, at the same moment, they start again from the beginning. Barachos, the very first volume of the Talmud. So that's why I think it's a misnomer to think that you complete the Torah with the reading of the Devarim. Simply speaking, Devarim, we'll analyze the name in a minute, there's several names for Devarim, but we call it Devarim, describes the end of the Israelites wandering in the wilderness, and the end of Moshe Rabbeinu's life, which itself is very tragic, very poignant when you think about it. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Moshe Rabbeinu's whole life has been pointed towards redeeming the Jews from Egypt, taking them through the desert, and to take them into the promised land. Yeah, the land was promised, but not to him. And he cannot go in to the promised land. As we'll see a little later on this evening, he can only view it from Transjordan, what's called today Transjordan, from the other side of the Jordan River. But he does not set foot in the land of promise. So part of Devarim tells us about the end of Moshe's life and the beginning of the entry into the land of promise. What does Devarim consist of? It consists primarily, on the surface again, of a farewell address, a kind of a valedictory that Moshe Rabbeinu is making to the Jewish people. He knows he's going to leave them. His death doesn't come suddenly. He's been warned by God that, sorry, you cannot go into the land. He knows this is his last week and his last day. And it's a valedictory, a farewell address to them. And he exhorts them, as any great leader would do, knowing that he's going to leave his people. He exhorts them about loyalty to God. And he reviews the history that they've all been through together. He expounds on the laws. But it's not merely a farewell address, because Devarim has in it many, many fundamental, very familiar Jewish practices that are not found in any other book, but only in Devarim. Mezuzah is in Devarim. It's not in any other book. Tefillin is in Devarim, in no other book. Tzitzis, the fringes on the talus, are in Devarim, in no other book. Shema Yisrael, the major statement of Jewish faith, the major statement of the Jewish covenant with God, Shema Yisrael, that a Jew recites on his deathbed, and that a Jewish child learns first, even before he knows how to speak, Shema Yisrael, the central affirmation of Jewish faith, is nowhere else but in this book of Devarim. So this is much more than just a valedictory, a farewell address. It's much more than that. So let's take a look. Where are we geographically when we're talking about the book of Devarim? Well, if you take a look at your map, in one of your handouts, I think in this one, in the back of this, the last page has a map of Eretz Yisrael and the other side of the Jordan. You see at the top, you see Syria. Syria is still there. You have the Bashan, which is the Golan Heights, the top right. Then you see the Sea of Galilee, and you go down a little of a half an inch, you see the death of Moses takes place right there. We don't know where it is, because the Torah tells us clearly that we don't know where Moshe was buried, but somewhere around there, because this is where this speech takes place. Go down a little lower, there's Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim, which is on the Israeli side. And then there's at number 41, you see the plains of Moab, Arvos Moab, which literally means the plains of Moab, non-mountainous area of Moab. If you stand even today near the town of Jericho, which is still in existence, it's about 20-25 minute drive east of Jerusalem, almost all downhill, because Jerusalem is up high and Jericho is down by the Jordan River, very low. It's almost all downhill, about a 20-30 minute drive. At number 41, you see the plains of Moab. Now, what are these numbers all about, just as a footnote? The numbers here just indicate the various stops that the children of Israel made from the time they left Egypt until the death of Moses. 41 was the last stop. That's where Moshe dies. So it really has nothing to do with us. It's just a map that contains the various stops of the wanderings through the desert, but just didn't want you to get confused about the numbers that are there. But wherever it says 41, that's where this speech of Moshe takes place. So that's the geographical setting of the book of Devarim. Now, let's take a look at the names for the book. The first most common name is what? Deuteronomy. The non-Jewish name, the general name. It's really a name that comes from Greek, which means the second law. Deutero, nomos means law, second law. It's as if the Greeks are trying to tell us that this book is going to be a repetition of the laws that were recited earlier. It's not exactly true, but the world calls it Deuteronomy. Fine. Another name is the Hebrew name that we've been using, Devarim. Let's take a look. If you have a Chumash in front of you, please, in the book of Deuteronomy, let's take a look at the text. If you don't have books in front of you, there are a bunch of them piled up over there. You were supposed to have gotten them when you came in. Wait a minute if you want to get them. You can get a few for your table if you don't. Because please try to have one available, because we'll be referring to the Chumash a number of times tonight, and I'd like you to have the text in front of you. Okay, so look at the very, very first verse, first pasuk, in what's on chapter 1, verse 1 in Deuteronomy, in Devarim, the opening line. Ele ha-Devarim, these are the words that Moshe spoke to all Israel on the other side of the Jordan concerning the wilderness, concerning the Arabah, opposite the Sea of Reeds, between Paran and Tophel and Laban and Chatzeros and Dizahav. It really doesn't describe the contents of the book of Devarim, but that's where we get the names of our biblical books. You take the first or second name of each one of the five books, and that becomes the name by which we know the book. What is beautifully and deliciously and poignantly ironic is another use of this word Devarim earlier on. If you can turn back now to the book of Exodus, chapter 4, Shemos, chapter 4. Chapter 4, verse 10. This is the scene where God wants Moshe, who's a shepherd in the desert. It's on page 302 in the Art Scroll, the Shul Chumash. I don't know what Chumash you have in front of you, but it's on 302 in the Art Chumash that we use in Shul. Verse I'm sorry, I gave you the wrong page. I gave you chapter 3. One second. Chapter 4, verse 10 is what I'm looking for. Is it 308?
Yes.
Okay. All right. 308. Moshe and God are having this fantastic dialogue that's really unbelievable. I mean, if God comes to you and says he wants you to take on a leadership role of the Jewish people, and God is talking to you, are you going to argue with him? But Moshe argues with God. He has a good precedent because Abraham earlier had argued with God when God wanted to destroy the city of Sodom. Abraham also argues with God. Jews are always arguing with God. We have to argue with somebody, you know. So if we can't find the spouse to argue with, we argue with God. But seriously speaking, it's an amazing scene that Moshe refuses the assignment that God is giving him. God is saying to him, I have chosen you to be the leader of the Jewish people, to take them out of slavery, to redeem them, to lead them into the desert. And Moshe says, I don't. Don't choose me, choose somebody else. Over and over again, the sages say it took a week's argument at the foot of Sinai that Moshe refused. And look at the word he uses a number in verse 10, in chapter 4, verse 10. Vayomer Moshe Asher El Hashem. It's a stunning, stunning words. Moshe says to God, Be Adonai, please my Lord, Lo ish devorim anochi. Get the key word there? What? Devorim. I am not a man of devorim, of words. Devorim means words. Why is Moshe saying this? Because he's the tradition is that he was either a stutterer or he had a lisp. He was unable to speak clearly. He said, I can't be a leader of the Jewish people if I can't speak. I can't go to Pharaoh and speak if I can't speak. Some say he wasn't really speaking about his ability to enunciate words, but he said he's been away from Egypt so long he doesn't know the Egyptian language. So, lo ish devorim, I can't go. But the general overarching tradition is that Moshe was not a man of words. And yet, look what happens at the end of Moshe's life. Eile ha-devorim, these are the words asher diber, which he spoke. Same word, diber, Moshe. These are the words which Moshe spoke. So throughout this whole cycle of his life, he not only becomes a man of words, but he gives a magnificent farewell valedictory to the Jewish people, which consists of words. So it's an amazing transformation that takes place. The same word, devorim, in the beginning, which he uses to fault himself, to downgrade himself, is the same word that the Torah says, Eile ha-devorim, as if the Torah is almost smiling at us and winking at us. These are the devorim of this man Moshe, who said he's not a man of devorim. We'll get into a little more of that later, because later on Moshe also says, God wants him to go to Pharaoh, and Moshe says, the Jewish people don't listen to me. How will Pharaoh listen to me? Besides which, adds Moshe, I am Aral Sefasayim. My lips are uncircumcised. What does he mean? My lips are uncircumcised. Again, he's saying, I have a speech defect. I can't speak clearly. There's beautiful midrashim, which we don't have time to get into tonight, about how he got a speech defect. But that's another story entirely. There are others say that he got his, that it's not really a speech defect. Moshe is saying that he is living on a different plane. He can't communicate with ordinary people. He's an extremely spiritual person. He can't use words to communicate with people because he's used to spirituality, to consorting with the angels, so to speak. I'm not a man of words. I can't communicate. I'm unable to communicate. Which makes it even more beautifully ironic that at the end he does communicate beautifully with the words El HaDvarim. Okay, we'll get into that a little bit later this evening, please God. So the two words for so far that we learned, the last of the five books. One is Deuteronomy, one is Devarim. The third one is Mishneh Torah, which is not as popularly utilized, but it means repetition or review of the Torah. What's the difference between repetition and review? Anybody know? Because Mishneh Torah can be both. It could be either repetition or it can mean review. What's the difference between repetition and review?
Repetition is exact.
Repetition is?
Exact.
Exact, right. Good. Repetition is precisely exact. Review, a person who's doing a review of past history can select and choose certain things. He won't repeat every single thing that took place. So in that sense, Moshe's the designation of Mishneh Torah is more accurate if we call it a review rather than a repetition, because it's not a repetition. We'll see in a minute. I keep saying we'll see in a minute. I hope my minutes don't run out before we see in a minute. But we'll see in a minute why it's not just simply a repetition. Now, if you'll take a look at your the back page of your of this class outline, have it? It says on the top, Sefer Devarim outline. The sense, I'll go over it, and we'll have some copies coming in a moment. But meanwhile, I want you to hear what the central issues are in the book of Devarim. The first several chapters deal with the history beginning with Mount Sinai to the plains of Moab. The fourth chapter deals with God's relationship with the people. The fifth chapter is a restatement of the Ten Commandments. But it's not just a repetition of the Ten Commandments. It's there are some significant changes which we won't take time tonight to discuss. The sixth chapter has the first paragraph of the famous Shema Yisrael, the Ohavto. First paragraph is in the sixth chapter of the Devarim. Then there are laws dealing with rejecting idol worship, with dietary laws, with giving tithes, with laws of the seventh year where the land must lie fallow, with laws of the festivals, with laws of the judges and the kings and Kohen and Levi and prophet, and laws of war, how you go to war and for what reason you may go to war. And then there's what you do when you enter the land, because you're not in the land now, you're in a desert. You have different obligations and different requirements. And then there's a repetition of the blessings of the covenant and the admonitions. And then there's a renewal of the covenant. And then there's the famous song of Moshe Rabbeinu. And then there's the blessing of Moshe. And then the final chapter, chapter 34, has the death of Moshe and the people mourning for Moshe for 30 days. So I'm sorry you don't have the handout with you. You'll get it in a minute. But that is a general outline of the book. How is Sefer Devarim different from the previous four books? It is different. It reads differently, stylistically different. How is it different? Let's take a look. Sometimes Devarim seems to repeat haphazardly certain events, actually repeat certain events that took place from previous books. It's got a very, very distinctive and special nature. And there's something very mysterious about that, and the Talmud itself recognizes it and discusses it. And I'd like you to read with me the handout that was given out tonight in this handout number A. There's a very, very crucial section there, which I have boxed off. You see it? Everybody got it? Okay. Let's start the first paragraph before the box on the right-hand side. Deuteronomy is unique in another way. In explaining the difference between the admonitions of Leviticus and Deuteronomy, the Talmudic sage Abaye says, the former, the first admonitions were said by God himself. The second was said by Moses himself. Maharal explains this at length and shows how it applies to the contents of Deuteronomy, but here's the point I want to make with you tonight, ladies and gentlemen. The Vilna Gaon makes the same point succinctly. Here it is, I'll read it. The first four books, this is very crucial, were heard directly from the mouth of the Holy One, blessed be He, through the throat of Moses. Not so Deuteronomy. Israel heard the words of this book the same way they heard the words of the prophets who came after Moses. I'll explain that in a minute. How did the prophets speak to the Jews? The Holy One, blessed be He, would speak to the prophet today, and on a later day, the prophet would go and make the vision known to Israel. In other words, the prophet could get a vision of God on Monday, and then he might not open his mouth to speak to the Jewish people till the following Monday. So, in all this time, the prophecy which he has received from God, and it's very hard to understand the whole concept of prophecy, but the prophecy which he has received from God is percolating within him. And what comes out is God's intent, but with his vocabulary. That's why you find different prophetic books. We'll get to that. You'll get to it in the spring. I won't get to it in the spring. You'll get to it in the spring. We certainly won't get to it tonight. Different prophetic books have different styles, different vocabularies, different ways of approaching things. Isaiah is different from Amos, and Amos is different from Joel, and Jeremiah is different from Ezekiel. Ezekiel gets reports things that are different from others. Why is this? So says the Gaon of Vilna, this is how prophets speak to the Jewish people. Accordingly, at the time the prophet spoke to the people, the word of God had already been removed from him, so to speak. So too the book of Devarim was heard from the mouth of Moses himself. In other words, unlike the other four books which emanate from the mouth of Moshe, so to speak, directly from God, which is very hard to comprehend, but this is the concept. It emanates from God through Moshe as the vehicle. Devarim are Moshe's words, inspired by God, told to him by God, but coming from his own vocabulary. That's the difference between the fifth book and the first four books. Has the same sanctity, the same holiness, it has the same reverence that we have for that book. But it's a book that was formulated in a different way. Now, what is Moshe doing in his farewell address in this book of Devarim? First of all, remember that he's talking to a whole new generation of Jews. These are Jews he's talking to who are not the ones who were slaves in Egypt, right? They were mostly born in the desert. That means what? They're born in the desert means they were not born as slaves. It's a big difference. They were born in freedom. So the whole upbringing is different. which could explain, by the way, why so frequently there are rebellions in the desert against Moshe. They're not a slave mentality. They don't accept everything. So there's a price you pay for being born in freedom, you see. But be that as it may, this is a new generation, and Moshe knows it. So he's talking to a new generation. And he's worried about what happens after he dies. He's scared. He's given his whole life to this people. He's 120 years old. His whole life since his youth has been given over to Am Yisrael. So he's preparing for the continuity after his death. So he rebukes the people and comforts them at the same time. Take a look at this in this booklet here that was given to you tonight. Number B, the introduction of Ramban. Okay? We'll read some of that. It's a very crucial introduction of Ramban. By the way, do you all know when we say Ramban what we're talking about? Ramban, there are two very famous individuals in classical Jewish biblical scholarship that should not be confused. I'll have to excuse my handwriting, though. Ramban, well, I'm going to put Rambam first because of chronology. And then there's Ramban. Can you see? Blocking you. With an N. Now, Rambam is Maimonides. I'll just abbreviate it. Maimon, it stands for Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon. That's why it's called Rambam. Everybody in the world calls him Rambam, but that's why it's called Rambam. It's an abbreviation. Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon. Ramban, who lived about a century later, Ramban is Nachmanides. Nachmanides means son of. As Rabbi Moshe ben Nachman. So two different people. Two giants. With Rashi there, the tripod. They're the three giants of Jewish classical literature, of Jewish classic scholarship. Rashi, everybody knows about Rashi, which is also an abbreviation. His name was not Rashi. By the way, you remember, some of you my age would remember a pitcher for the New York Yankees whose name was Vic. No one here. What kind of show has my son got? Nobody heard of Vic? Surely you heard of Vic Rashi. I'm crushed. Vic Rashi was the idol of our youth. He was a pitcher for the New York Yankees. Yeah, Vic Rashi. All right, anyway, Rashi, the third great of the tripod of the classical Jewish classical scholars, is Rashi. His name is Rabbi Shimon Yitzchaki. He's known as Rashi. No, very few people know it. It's an abbreviation again. Rabbi Shimon Yitzchaki. So remember, this is very important. Rambam, who's not a commentary on the Chumash. Rambam's great contribution is as the codifier of Jewish law.
Due to technical difficulties, the rest of this class was not recorded. We truly apologize for this.